FM Rewind, File 88.1.
As I mentioned earlier on, that we are commemorating World Hemophilia Day, commemorated annually on the 17th of April. Perhaps you're wondering what exactly hemophilia is. Well, we are joined by an expert to give us more insight into the medical condition. That is Dr. Ngwakwana Mahlatshana, who is a qualified pediatrician who are currently running a hemophilia clinic at Charlotte Maxeke Academic Hospital. There's approximately 30% cases of hemophilia that occur sporadically at birth, with hemophilia A being four times frequent than hemophilia B. The case remains challenges. I'm talking about the cases. They remain a challenge, especially in resource-limited areas where hemophilia and other non-communicable diseases may not be considered a healthcare priority. How do we prioritize hemophilia diagnosis? How do we make sure that we prioritize the treatment and care, especially within our forgotten communities? Dr. Ngwakwana Mahlatshana is on the line. Good evening, Doctor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. And good evening to your listeners as well.
Hemophilia, a rarely discussed and, spoken about topic because of I realize that every time I have a conversation with my peers about hemophilia, only few are aware of what exactly condition is. Let's get into it from a medical perspective. What is hemophilia?
Well, thank you for this opportunity. I would describe it as it's an X-linked congenital inherited disorder, meaning the abnormality is on the X chromosome. So, meaning the abnormality is on the X chromosome, right? The females usually are the carriers of this disease. So they carry the disease and they pass it on to their children, right? So it goes from one generation to the other, from one generation to the other, affecting more males than females. Like, it manifests more in males than in females. It affects both males and females. Yeah.
Let's talk about why it is prevalent towards or in male than in females. What is the reason behind that?
Well, with males, you have chromosomes XY, right? You have one X. So if you have that X affected by this genetic abnormality, you don't have another X to protect you. The females are XX. So if I have one X that has faults, the other X can protect me. So that is why in females it does not manifest as severely as it does in males.
I mean, based on research that my producer managed to find out, is that approximately 30% cases of hemophilia occur, especially during birth, with hemophilia A being four times frequent than hemophilia B. And I want us to talk about different types of hemophilia. What are they?
Well, in children, right, the hemophilia that we see is congenital, so the babies are born with it. So it's three types that we see in children: is hemophilia A, hemophilia B, and hemophilia C. Like you said, hemophilia A is more common than hemophilia B, and hemophilia C is not common in South Africa. Is more common in the Ashkenazi Jews. We hardly see it. I haven't come across one. But yeah, it's very rare. So the types of hemophilia that we see and treat regularly in our clinic is hemophilia A and hemophilia B.
Now, let's get into the prevalence of hemophilia in South Africa. Do we have, are we currently seeing more people being diagnosed with hemophilia compared to years ago?
I would say so, even though I can't quantify it. The reason being, years ago, the knowledge, the awareness wasn't as much as it is now, and information wasn't traveling as fast as it is now. So the diagnosis and identifying patients affected by hemophilia was more difficult as compared to now. So in these days, I would say we are picking up a lot more than we were previously.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, let's talk about the common signs and symptoms, especially among individuals, adults, who are not yet diagnosed, who have not yet perhaps visited any health facility to find out what's wrong with their health. Are there any early symptoms that one can be able to point out, to quantify and be able to tell that it is perhaps hemophilia than any other non-communicable disease?
So, like you said, it's a disease that babies will be born with because it's inherited and it's congenital. So it manifests quite early, depending on how severe the disease is, because the patient can be severely affected, meaning that the quantity of factor VIII, because the hemophilia is when you have a deficient, or you have a lack or a deficient factor VIII in the bloodstream, right? So the normal quantity would be 50 and above. So an affected individual with a level of less than 1% in their bloodstream of factor VIII, we say they're severely affected. An individual who has 2% to 5%, they're moderately affected. And an individual who has more than 5%, they are mildly affected. So the symptoms will be different, and they most probably will start from birth. A patient who is severely affected, meaning that their level of factor VIII concentration in the body is less than 1%, they would manifest earlier and easier, meaning that these patients are prone to spontaneous bleeds. Like a patient can just go to bed to sleep, and in the following morning they have a swollen elbow, and they can't even remember getting hurt. They just bled into the joint without provocation. So in the infant, there will be babies, male babies that are born stillbirths, and most of the times the reason is not found out why. It will be because they would have bled into their brain. They would have had intracranial bleeding because of the pressures and the trauma of birth. And in most cases, we never get to find out what killed the neonate. We just attribute it to maternal or fetal complications. And then if the baby survives that and they don't have intracranial bleed, when their umbilicus falls at around 7 to 14 days, some of them will just have this bleeding around the umbilicus that does not stop. This bleeding, just every time you change a nappy, there is bleeding around the umbilicus. But the bleeding is not a lot, so it doesn't shock a lot of people. It's just, you know, it's like a smear on the nappy. So, and in this is very dangerous because a baby will bleed like this for a few days before they collapse, because they would have lost a lot of blood, and it is not alarming. So a lot of people really miss it. If they survive this, When they go to have immunizations at 6 weeks, at 10 weeks, at 14 weeks, you'd hear that the baby had immunizations, but then where they injected the baby, there's a lump underneath. There's a lump, and then it goes away after a few days. Or they injected the baby on the thigh or on the upper arm, and it just gets so swollen and so badly swollen that it needs medical attention.
Now, as an inheritant,
it's not the end. So if they survive that, that is not a problem. They, when they start walking, they start crawling, then they start bleeding into their joints, because now they're using their joints even more. The baby starts crawling, and then one day the baby doesn't want to crawl, and you don't know why. They could be having a joint bleed. They don't want to move a limb, either a leg or an arm. It may be because they're having a bleed in the joint. And in infancy, there's a high incidence of intracranial bleeds as well. So some of the cord deaths could be attributed to intracranial bleeds due to hemophilia. And as the patients grows and they can walk and they can run, then the joint bleeds are more common than followed by the muscle bleeds. Yeah.
It does, sound like a very complicated and complex medical condition that young people don't deserve to live with. Now, let's talk about the preventative measures, especially from parents, to avoid passing it to their offspring. First of all, is it possible? And secondly, if it's possible, what are the preventative measures that you'd advise parents to follow in order to avoid the medical condition or the disease being passed from them as parents to their offspring?
Yeah, prevention, I would say it's almost, I do not want to say impossible, but it's that difficult, because hemophilia is so, it's difficult to even identify. The reason being, it can skip generations without identifying itself, and it affects different people in different ways, and the way it presents itself, it does not necessarily follow rules. You understand? So there are other generations where they will not be affected by hemophilia, and as a result, they do not know that they have hemophilia in their family lines. So if you don't know that you have something, you will not take steps to prevent something that you don't have. So preventing it is very difficult, if not impossible. And when you identify a patient with hemophilia, a male patient, there is, well, nothing much that you are going to do to prevent it, unless if you say the person mustn't have children. Because now, if they have a girl child, they are going to pass the X chromosome to the girl child. The girl child may or may not be a carrier. It's a chance. And then if an affected male has boys only, that will be a way of eliminating the disease in the family line.
I mean, doctor, the care remains challenging, especially in resource-limited areas where hemophilia and other non-communicable diseases may not be considered a healthcare priority. Just to wrap up this interview, how do we prioritize hemophilia diagnosis? How do we make sure that we prioritize the treatment and care, especially within our forgotten communities? And most importantly, teaching people about the existence of this medical condition. How do we bridge the gap?
awareness, 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 and awareness. Because if you are not aware, you are not going to be in a position where you want to do something about it. And because it is such a rare disease, and it's not something that a lot of people really want to know about, because even amongst healthcare professionals, there are people that just don't want to hear about it just because they're not interested, or it's not interesting, and it doesn't have, you know, there's not a lot of patients that are affected by hemophilia. So awareness, awareness, and awareness. And the thing is, the treatment, although we wouldn't like to keep it centralized, we would like to expand the knowledge and improve access to treatment even to the communities that are disadvantaged. If you go to the rural areas, because this disease is so rare, you'd find that you have one patient or one family that is affected. So because it is so rare, not a lot of people get to be exposed to it. That's what makes it difficult. Because now, even if you said, there's only a few of your friends that are aware of what hemophilia is.
Yeah, indeed.
Awareness,
indeed.
Awareness, awareness. That's the most important thing that we should do. Because then, if you are aware, then you'll be aware of how and where to access treatment and who to connect with.
Amazing. Awareness, awareness, awareness. Doctor, once again, thank you so much for joining us right here on VOW 88.1. How can people get hold of you?
I work at Charlotte Makeke Academic Hospital in area 294. Our landline is 011-488-3294 or 5. And yes, those are my contact details.
All right. Wishing you a splendid long weekend, Doctor. Once again, thank you so much for sharing such an insightful, information with us. And thank you so much once again. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, and have a good weekend.
Lovely. That was Dr. Ngwakwana Mahlatshana, a pediatrician, joining us on the line to talk to us about hemophilia as we commemorate World Hemophilia Day.
FM Rewind, VOW 88.1.